Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, big cat advocate Carol Baskin talks about adopting tigers and ligers.
I go to the side gate and push it open, and I'm walking around inside this backyard area. Now it's getting really dark, and I can't quite see what's going on. And there's like this 45-degree angle or steeper slope that I'm walking down, and it's muddy because it's been raining. And I'm trying to get a grip on, you know, like, if there's three cats back here, where the heck are they? And I see chain link fencing, and so I'm making my way over to the chain link, and I hear this bang up on the fence right next to me, and this tiger is just looming over me. She has seen me fumbling around in the dark and has come flying across her cage and thrown herself against this fence.
Today on the show, big cat activist Carol Baskin talks about adopting tigers and ligers. Stay close.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol Baskin, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian and writer Josh Gondelman. Josh's story, actually, now that I think of it, Carol, his story was called Adopting a Dog. And now we're coming all the way from adopting a dog to adopting tigers and ligers with Carol Baskin. And right off the top, what's the difference between a tiger and a liger?
A liger is a man-made creature from crossing lions and tigers to each other. It would not happen in the wild because lions and tigers live on different continents.
Oh my gosh. That's unbelievable. I mean, that seems like, yeah. So people purposefully will take a lion, put it in an enclosure with a tiger, and they will mate.
If they don't kill each other. I mean, It's hard enough even when you're trying to breed two lions or two tigers together that they don't kill each other. But to put in different species like that, the reason ligers have been so expensive and popular is because of the fact that they've been rare due to the fact that, one, it's hard to even get them to mate and produce a cub. And the other thing is they suffer from something called gigantism. People grow usually until we're like teenagers and we stop growing, but ligers grow until it just kills them. They can't stop growing. And there's a few of them who don't have that dilemma. And the one that I rescued did not. So she stayed small, like a lion or a tiger, but ligers can be over 1,200, 1,500 pounds before they die from it.
Oh my God. That is unbelievable. Wow, I did not know that about a liger. Let me ask you, Carol, growing up, did you have house cats?
I've always had cats. In fact, the very first photo of me is my mother holding me and my father holding our cat. And I didn't even know until recently when I pulled it out of our family photo album to scan it for somebody else who wanted a baby picture of me, that it said that the cat's name was Tiger, which I find really funny.
Get out of here. Is that right? That's so cute. That is super cute. I've always had cats. And, but when I had cats, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, it was like cats were, I don't know, they were like, I don't mean to say dispensable, but it was like, well, you have a cat, it dies, you get another cat, and then you get another cat, and you get another cat. Like, it wasn't, you know, now, well, I guess it just depends.
I think we've become more aware of how sentient they are.
Yeah, of course. And I have two cats. I sent you a picture of one of them. And that one I actually rescued last year during the pandemic. I always had this dream about rescuing a kitten. Like I've always had this like a fantasy or a romantic idea of rescuing a kitten, you know? Like I think like, oh, there's going to be this baby kitten and he's crying, he's in the dumpster, and I'm going to go in there, I'm going to get that kitten. And I don't know why I've had that recurring dream. And then last year during the pandemic, sure enough, there's a baby kitten outside my door. And after a few days, I was able to get it. And, it was under 2 pounds. And the vet was like, you know, good luck. It might not survive. And, there's just something about cats. And I suppose that your love of cats it must generate sort of from the same place. So just your love of the animal.
Well, I think what you think about, you bring about, and you obviously did. So that was really a funny story to me. I love that when people tell me that they kept thinking about something and then all of a sudden it happened. It's like, yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah, I guess so. But like, I remember there was a video, a Netflix video or something called The Lion in the Living Room or The Lion in My Living Room, basically saying that a house cat is comparable to a big cat. Is that true?
If they have all of the same, they're susceptible to all of the same diseases. They have to have all of the same vaccines. They have all of the same nutritional needs, and the domestic cats and wild cats need a whole meat diet. They don't eat grains or fruits like dogs do. But where that line is drawn between big cats and small cats is that when a small cat grows up, they have been selectively chosen and bred over eons to become house pets, whereas wild cats have been selectively chosen for survival of the fittest, which means you kill your mother when it's time to take over the territory, and that person that raised you was your mother. So
Jesus, is that right? Is that right? Like a tiger cub would eventually kill his mother?
Yeah.
Really? Why? They don't eat. They wouldn't eat their own, would they?
Well, sometimes they do, but the reason that a cub would kill its mother is for territory. So when the cubs get big enough to hunt, the mother will shove them off on their own and say, you go find your own territory. But if she were older or weaker, they'd be like, you know what? This is pretty good territory here. You got to go. And so that's why it's survival of the fittest and why these cats have managed to be the apex predators that they are. But just because we raise them in our house doesn't mean that they're going to change all of those eons of hardwiring to become a pet just because we have some romantic idea that they should be a pet.
Right, right. Like my cats are always very, very loving and friendly, but then they do have that side of them. Like my one cat, Sophie, she sleeps like pretty much on my head, like on my pillow. But every once in a while, if she catches like a wild notion in the night or whatever, it's happened maybe just a handful of times, but she'll take both her paws and put them around my head, like in a very, like she's playing, but she'll grab on, you know what I mean? Like all of a sudden you'll see like even the power in my 11-pound cat, like you can feel her strength.
Pound for pound, cats are 12 times stronger than humans, so that's why you're recognizing that power in her.
Really? Well, that's very interesting. Holy cow. So, Carol, you have done so much. Your life is really an amazing adventure. And, of course, Tiger King brought so much of all this stuff to light. It seems like at the end of the day, you've brought more attention to Big Cat Rescue. I mean, at the end of the day, this is all about rescuing these cats. And you did get more attention, and I'm just thinking, is your business going better, as it were? You feel like you're making strides. You testify in front of Congress. You do a lot of important things.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because this morning I was being interviewed by two of our volunteers who have been here for a long time. They're taking up, I used to do a podcast called The Cat Chat Show, and they're reviving it. And so they were talking about how Big Cat Rescue has been so famous for all of the stuff that we've been doing all of these years. And I find it so funny because when people who didn't know us, they're like, oh, Tiger King made you famous. It's like, are you kidding? Everybody knew who Big Cat Rescue was and what we were doing. Well, apparently not. It was only people in the animal rescue world who knew us. But we thought everybody knew us.
Yeah.
And so now we hear that. Now that we're, like, newly found, like, are you kidding? We've been doing this for 30 years.
Right, I know. And when you go to the website, bigcatrescue.org, you can see the years and years of hard work you've put in. The website is flawless. You've got so many wonderful resources and references. I mean, it's really clear. So it's obvious you've been working forever. But I guess it's the same idea as that guy, Joe Exotica. He had that cable access show or whatever, but he only had 80 viewers.
It was a YouTube channel.
A YouTube channel. He had like 80 subscribers. That's it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But and I know because I've heard you on another show talk about how you always had open arms for people to come into the Big Cat Rescue to check it out, see what you're doing, because of course you're trying to further your cause. And so when those producers of Tiger King came in, you said, yeah, come on in. And then they misrepresented themselves by saying that this is going to be like Blackfish, but with tigers.
Did you see Blackfish?
I did, yeah. And that was like 2013, I think. That was a while ago.
And it made such a huge impact. So we were thrilled to work with anybody who said that they were going to do the same thing for big cats. And I think maybe alluding to what you were saying before, as far as did it give us any kind of opportunities, I think Tiger King did, because apparently there were an awful lot of people who did not know about the big cat issues and how horrible this life is for these cubs and how all of this captive breeding is actually causing the extinction of these cats in the wild. So it has given me a huge opportunity to bring that message to people and let them know that we have to stop the cub petting and stop the private ownership if we have any chance of saving these cats in the wild where they actually belong. Right. So it has it's given me a international platform for that I didn't have before. Yeah. I thought I had it, but apparently I was talking to the wind.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting, and I also heard you talk about on another program how, you know, it's the way the other countries see our country and what we're doing over here with our wild cats or our big cats, and the fact that there's only 4,000 big cats in the wild in India. Where else are they? India, Pakistan, Russia, Pakistan.
There's big cats there. There's not tigers.
Not tigers. China. China has them, right? So there's only 4,000 in the wild, but how many at the zoos in our country?
There's only ever once been a census done by USDA, which is the regulating body for places that are exhibiting the animals to the public, so like your zoos. There are 200 accredited AZA zoos in America, so if you figure each zoo probably has two or three cats, you're talking about 300, 400 cats. But the USDA census that they did in 2004 showed that there were 5,000 tigers, just plain tigers. And this was in like crappy little roadside zoos, like the GW Zoo and the Tiger King Park and Wildlife in Need, all of these places that you saw in Tiger King. Yeah. There's a gazillion of those non-accredited places out there that had tigers. And nobody's ever done a count on all of the other cats. And there's never been a count on how many are privately owned in the U.S., which is legal. And so we can only guess that there's somewhere between 5,000, 10,000, 15,000, who even knows.
Yeah.
But our federal bill, what it does is it stops the cub petting, which is what drives all of the breeding and abuse and discarding of the cubs or the killing of the cubs when they get to be about 3 months old. It does that and it phases out the private possession. So people who have them can keep them, they just can't buy or breed more.
Yeah.
And that number, you know, those numbers will definitely come down once we stop the breeding and stop people from being able to get their hands on more cats.
Yeah, well, I would sure hope so. It's also, it's just such a bad representation of our country, because then we're over there telling these other countries in India, you know, don't poach these cats. Don't go for tiger penises. Don't go for, you know, their teeth. You know, don't do this to these animals. And then they look at us and they say, "What are you talking about? You have no laws on America. So why should we?" Is that basically it?
That's the biggest problem. So I sent my daughter and our veterinarian to CITES. CITES is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. And this is the global panel of like all the countries come together and they decide how they're going to treat endangered species and what allowances they're going to make for their uses or not. And so it's been illegal for many years to sell any kind of tiger parts, tiger teeth, tiger claws, tiger skins, tiger bone wine, or tiger penises, as you pointed out. That's been illegal, but China has seen the fact that they've lost almost all of their tigers. In fact, there was just yesterday I saw some internet streaming cameras, and they are so thrilled to actually see some tigers are actually coming back into parts of northern China, which is fabulous. But they've lost most of their tigers. And so what China's been banking on is that these cats will go extinct in the wild. And I think they will in the next 5 years if we don't stop what we're doing in captivity. And once they do that, they have thousands of tigers on tiger farms where once they are dead in the wild, then they won't be protected and then they can actually trade in their parts. And they're building this desire for these parts, saying, well, if we farm them like cattle, then people won't want to poach the wild tigers. And what we know from other animal species that they've done that with is it actually puts more pressure on tigers in the wild, because people who can afford it always want the wild product, the premium product. Nobody wants an inbred cage-raised tiger part. They want the one that was really wild and virile. Yeah, so it's putting so much more pressure on those cats in the wild. And when we go to CITES as Americans and we say, no, we need to ban this trade, we need to stop these tiger farms from existing and stop this whole idea of banking on their extinction and actually work on preserving them in the wild, China says, who are you to talk? You don't even know where your tigers are. Oof. And so that's why we have to get a handle on what we're doing in the U.S., or we have no authority on the international stage.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Did you ever think your whole life would be about this big cat preservation?
Never in a million years did I see this coming. I thought my mission in life was to protect domestic cats and kittens from being killed in shelters due to overpopulation. I've had that as my life's goal since I was 8 years old. And so it wasn't until I accidentally stumbled upon the fact that cats were being sold at auctions to taxidermists or being sold to fur farmers or being sold by fur farmers, and that they were actually being killed for their fur. I mean, all of that was news to me. I didn't know that even happened. And at each juncture along the way, I thought, well, I can fix that. I was pretty naive. I thought I could fix it really fast, and it's been 30 years of trying to fix it. But I think we're closing in on it now. The fur industry's dead, and the private ownership and the cub petting is going to be dead this year.
Yeah. When you walk through your sanctuary now, do you think those tigers know who you are? Do they not recognize you, but they smell you, they hear your voice, what?
They are just like your pets in that they recognize each other, they recognize people for who they are that's different. I have even known cats who came here who had been raised by other people. And when the cat was here on the property, and we're 57 acres here, you could be out next to that cat's enclosure. And when that person drove onto the property and got out of their car in the parking lot 20 acres away, that cat would be like, my person's here. And they know that person that had raised them. Not that they're going to be able to live with that person, because they just play too rough. And that's never going to work out, but they recognize each other.
Well,
they recognize people.
And that's like a house cat. I know that when I pull my car in, I can see my kitty jump up into the window as soon as I get out of the car.
They know your motor.
Yeah. They know my motor. That's funny. And it's true. And I walk in the house. And by the way, my house cats, they always say hello, but they never say goodbye. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. My cat never walks me to the door and says, have a nice day.
Right. Cats, you know, they're so independent, but then they're not. I mean, they are and they're not. I mean, I'm just talking about my house kitties and also their internal schedule, you know, about when they're going to eat, and they know when they're going to eat, and they're going to drag you out of bed to tell you that, you know, they're ready to eat. It's funny how they're very, I don't know what the word is, predictable.
Yeah, they definitely like their routines.
Yeah, they like their routines. Okay, so let's get over to your story, adopting tigers and ligers, in just a second. But I also want to ask you, you are such an independent force. I know you left home at 15. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother who is 6 years younger than me. So because of the fact that I left so young, I think he was like, what, 8 or 9 at the time. So I really didn't grow up getting to know him.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't. I have one sister 10 years older than me, and, you know, she left the house. I was 7. So,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So leaving at 15, it just seems so young. I was 17 when I left my home in Pittsburgh, but I had graduated high school, but I left early. And when I look back, I think like, oh my God, what was I doing? Where did I get that confidence? Like, where did I get the balls, you know, to just say, I'm out of here. You know, I and I know that part of it, I had a lot of anger because of my family. It was like a big Catholic situation, and I was not that. And I don't know. I don't know where I got the strength to do that. But I know you did that, too. Walk away at 15. That's incredible.
Yeah, there's a song where there's a line in it that says you got to leave home while you're still not afraid. And I think there's a lot to that. You know, when you're 15, when you're 17, you are full of confidence. You do feel like you are totally invincible and you can take on the world. And when you stay home longer than that, I've known people who left home at the age of 30. They're a lot more timid about it because they're a lot more realistic than we were when we were young.
Yeah, they're a lot more realistic. Yeah, they are aware that we're the crazy ones. We're the ones that just said like, oh no, I got this. Anyway, I thought that was interesting about you because you've always been independent. You've always been a strong woman. You're very well spoken.
Well, thank you.
You know, you really are. Have you ever gone to Africa into any of the safaris?
My daughter, Jamie, has been doing this with me since she was 12. She loves that sort of thing. In fact, she's in Yellowstone right now. She took her RV out to Yellowstone for 2 weeks. And she's made several trips to Africa. She went down to Guyana to help the Amerindian Indians down there in build up ecotourism so that they would, instead of killing jaguars that were coming into their camps, now they take people out to see the jaguars that come into the camps. And so she loves that kind of thing. I feel like if I were to see these cats living in the wild, I would not be able to deal with the heartbreak of seeing them in cages every day until I'm able to fix this problem. And so as soon as this federal bill passes, and I know that there won't be any more big cats born into cages in the U.S., then I really do want to see them in the wild because that would be amazing.
Yeah, I know. On Twitter, I follow Kruger National Park. I think it's in the Serengeti. And I'm just so enamored by that Twitter feed, you know, just to see the animals like in that moment, especially the cats in the trees with kills, you know, just all of it. I mean, it's like the real thing and it's happening. Like, I mean, maybe it isn't, but in my head, it's Twitter, you know, and somebody's taking the photo and they say, you know, this is happening. And I'm like, oh my God, there's two lions under the crocodile bridge. Quick, you know, like, I don't know. I just think, but I know, I feel like I'm in the moment and it all seems like really exciting to go over and do a safari. That's definitely on my bucket list as well, for sure. Yeah. All right, so we're going to get over to your story, Adopting Tigers and Ligers. I mentioned that the guest last week, Josh Gondelman, talked about adopting a dog, and he was talking about adopting a dog in New York City during the pandemic and how hard that was because everybody wanted a dog, and in New York, they need small dogs because they're in apartments, et cetera, and how he was trying to adopt a dog. And then he ended up, well, you guys should go back and listen to that episode. He ended up adopting this dog, but the thing is the guy, you know, he couldn't find a dog in a shelter, so he went on Twitter. And then this other Twitter guy says, you know, I got a dog, and ended up giving him the dog. But the point is it was very nefarious because the guy was actually like trying to get a writing gig or a comedy gig from my guest, Josh Gondelman. And so it got like creepy. You know, you've got to have security around. You've got to have, because you just don't know. People are very unpredictable, you know, what they're going to do. And you learn from those producers that they could just twist anything. So anyway, it was just funny that last week talking about adopting a dog, you know, it was just it wasn't as clean as it sounds. But hopefully your story, I think it's going to be better. But before we get over to Carol's story, you guys, I wanted to remind you that we are back at the Hollywood Improv playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show, the last Saturday of the month. The next show is September 25th, and then we go October 23rd and November 27th. Again, you guys, come on down. I've got Danny Zucker, Blanca Patch, Melissa Peterman, some fantastic comedians that are judging the show, and we're having a blast. Carol, you'd love my show. I have comedians come on the stage. They spin this big wheel, and whatever the wheel lands on, their different topics, they tell a true one-minute story.
Wow. No pressure there.
Right. you land on birthdays, or you land on, you know, being drunk, or you land on mom, or you land on pets. And then you have 1 minute to tell the story, and there's a clock ticking down, and then the judges comment. And it's so funny. First of all, it's funny how much you can tell somebody in 1 minute. Like, you can really, you can tell a story in 1 minute. And, anyway, and then the second round is 2 minutes, and the third round is 3 minutes, and we're having a blast. So you guys, go over to StorySmashShow.com to find out more about Story Smash and get your tickets for the next show over there at the Hollywood Improv. Thank you. All right, you guys, she's here right now, Carol Baskin. She is an American big cats rights activist and the CEO of Big Cat Rescue, which is a nonprofit animal sanctuary based in, or it's near Tampa, Florida. It's down in Tampa, yes?
It's 15 minutes northwest of the Tampa International Airport. So it's called Citrus Park.
Yeah, but Citrus it's Tampa. Park. Yeah. And do the cats like that hot weather?
Most of our cats are tropical cats, so they do quite well in the weather. We had snow leopards in the past, and so my father had built a air conditioned den so they can actually lay inside in the air conditioning, or it blows on the rocks so the rocks were nice and cool that they could lay on. And the snow leopards are long gone, but we do have a Canada lynx who likes that. And then most of, like I said, the cats are from places like Africa and India, places where it's very hot.
Tropical. That's interesting. Yeah. And then, like we talked about, you did draw a lot of attention in that 2020 true crime documentary series, Tiger King. And let's back up the true crime part, because it was just the most bizarre thing I ever saw. And I think, well, you probably also assume this, that it was because it was the pandemic, right? We're all home, and then this wacky show comes on, and that guy was such a crazy character. I remember, like, in whatever it was, like, part two or three or whenever, all of a sudden then he talks about that he's gay. And it's like, you're gay? And then all of a sudden he's saying he's a singer and he's showing these videos, but it's obviously not him. He's not singing. You know what I mean? It was just such a combination of bizarro that...
Yeah.
I mean, it was just such a crazy combination. It was the videos. It was just... him, so weird. And then the people that worked at the parks, you know, they're getting their hand bit off and they're like, yeah, whatever, it's just another day, move on. And everybody's like, oh my god, that guy just, or that woman had her hand bit off.
Yeah, it really was a perfect storm, because there's a lot of crazy characters. I mean, you gotta think about it. Anybody who wants to fill up their backyard with lions and tigers is probably crazy to begin with. And then you take all of the craziness that happens when you put a bunch of derelicts in close contact with apex predators, and that is crazy enough as it is. And then when you introduce the narcissism and the misogyny and all of those other elements of that show, it was just a dumpster fire that people could not turn away from. And we were all locked in our houses. And we were all scared to death and wanting something that would just take us completely out of what we were thinking about, which was we're all going to die from a pandemic. And so I think the timing could not have been better.
Yeah. Yeah. God, that guy is just such a weird cat. Let's say that. No, and thank God he's in jail. I think he's in jail for a long time in a penitentiary. And I also read, though, that one of his husbands recently died. The one that was in the special with no teeth, he died.
Like, he wasn't like, the husband. He was just a worker. But, yeah, he just died a few days ago in New York.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. The whole thing was nuts. But you've got Big Cat Rescue, a lot of attention from this, or it happened, and that's good news, as it were. And then you go on with all the confidence and balls in the world, man, and you go on Dancing with the Stars. And I have to tell you, I was so flipping impressed by you. That must have been the hardest thing in the world.
It was the hardest thing I've ever done physically, and it was really humbling, because my attitude has always been, whenever I take something on, how hard can it be, right? It's really hard. And
oh, no, they're athletes.
Yes.
They're athletes.
And, you know, I really believed that, and my mother did a great job of telling me, anything that you want to do, you can absolutely do it if you put your mind to it. Another thing she always said is, you can fix anything if you throw enough money at it. but, and I'm finding that to be true with the big cat issue, but I really believed that I could stay on that show to the very end and keep tigers in front of America every single episode. And I was really humbled by the fact that by the third show, they really had to let me go because it was clear I was never going to have any rhythm or any ability to keep up with the other athletes, as you very accurately describe them.
Well, I think you had rhythm. I mean, I think you... No, I mean, I think you gave it a great shot. You had a great attitude. You were laughing and smiling. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, the idea of the show is that people don't know how to dance. They teach them to dance, and then somebody wins the thing. But what happens is they say that people don't know how to dance, and then they have on ice skaters. Or, like, you know what I mean? Oh, this year, I think coming on this next episode, there's like a Rockette. Do you know what I mean? So what the heck is that, you know? It's so clear that so many people worked very hard to say that they don't know how to dance. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember Donny Osmond, oh, years ago, he won, because my daughter and I always watch Dancing with the Stars. We made up little paddles we hold up. 7, 8. It's just because, you know, you have a daughter, you know, you bond over certain shows. So for some reason, well, my daughter's a dancer. That's probably why that we watch it. But over the years, you know, I remember Donny Osmond won it one year. But I also know a friend who knows him and said that he took lessons for months before that show even started, you know, to get a leg up, you know, because it is so hard. You know, the people that are dancing on that show, the professionals, they've been dancing their whole lives, 35 years, 30 years, 25 years or whatever. And then they bring in the, you know, the, that's the other thing. Like, you were the celebrity. In other words, you're the celebrity on the show, but you're not the dancer. You're the celebrity. They're the dancers. So the idea is, yeah, match the celebrity with the dancer. And that they're supposed to teach you what they know in 25 years in a week and a half. Anyway, I was just really impressed that you went on. I think you had a great attitude. I think you were fun and cute and funny. And again, it all goes back to the Big Cat Rescue. And that's really what we want people to take a look at. So you guys, without further ado, make sure you do check out Carol Baskin over at bigcatrescue.org. It's an incredibly good resource and very, very thorough, very well done, super professional site. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Carol Baskin.
Thank you. It was actually, when you talked about your daughter and you loving that show, my daughter, when she saw all of the media that had reached out to us after Tiger King, she said, there's only two things on here I want you to do. One is the Jimmy Fallon show, and the other is Dancing with the Stars, because she loves that show. I had never seen the show before.
That's adorable. Oh, that's so sweet. Good. That's
the Jimmy
nice.
Fallon thing turned out to be a prank, but it turned out really funny, and the kids got 7 million views, and they let me talk for like an hour about the tiger issue, so it was like, hey, that's all good.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I had been asked by the Louisiana Department of Fish and Wildlife to come rescue Tony, who was a tiger that was being kept at a truck stop there. They were going to seize the cat from the owner. During the history of Big Cat Rescue, we had gotten more complaints about Tony, the truck stop tiger, than all of the other complaints combined. And the reason was he was at a truck stop in a tiny little cage right next to the diesel pumps. And the noise and the smell, and they had a sign up that said, don't throw rocks at the tiger, which means people were throwing rocks at the tiger. And so when they finally said they were going to seize this cat, I went out ahead of our rescue team, which I usually do. I go out there a day or two ahead of time to make sure that everything is going to be, you know, that we bring everything that we would possibly need in order to do that rescue. So I had gone there, and the owner, Michael Sandlin, who was a friend of Joe Exotics, went and got a restraining order from the judge that kept the Department of Fish and Wildlife from being able to seize the cat. So I was getting ready to come back to Tampa, and I got a call from a woman named Doll Stanley, I think, and she was with an animal rescue group in Mississippi. And she said, we've got a situation here. It's absolutely desperate. I need you to come. So I thought, well, I'm already in Louisiana. I'll just go to Mississippi. And so I drive over to Mississippi, and the situation had been that this owner of a topless bar had decided he wanted to have big cats, and had, I think at his peak, he had like 40 or 50 lions and tigers and ligers and cougars and other big cats in his backyard in a residential neighborhood. And he decided he couldn't make a go of it. The people who were volunteers and workers there were continuing to come to his house to take care of the animals, but they didn't have any way of raising money. They didn't have any money for the vet bills. They had gotten down to the last 12 cats, and these cats were dying horrific deaths because they weren't getting any veterinary care and they weren't being fed properly. And so the guy took the last of the money that he had and invested it in another topless bar and moved like 70 miles away and just left the cats behind. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. He abandoned the animals?
Just walked away and left these last 12 cats there.
Oh my God.
And well, actually it was more cats than that. It was closer to 40 at the time. And so a bunch of rescue groups, and this was well before the day that I got there, and a bunch of rescue groups had gotten together. We weren't as organized back then, and they had rescued a whole bunch of the cats, but they had left these 12 cats behind. And so this woman, Doll Stanley, had been going out there whenever she could raise money or food for the cats and taking care of them, but she just couldn't handle it. And all but three of the cats had ended up dying before I got the call from her saying, there's three cats left on the property. They're going to die. Can you take them to Big Cat Rescue? So I thought, well, I'm already here in Louisiana. I drive over to Mississippi. I get there right as it's getting dark. I drive through this residential neighborhood. It's like, you know, houses and backyards and, you know, how people have like fences around their yard. And I'm thinking, this can't be the right place for a place that had 40 or 50 big cats. And I get to the location, and it's like, well, the house is obviously abandoned and has been for a while. And there's a picket wood or, you know, wooden fence around the backyard. So I knock on the door. There's no answer there. I go to the side gate and push it open, and I'm walking around inside this backyard area. And now it's getting really dark, and I can't quite see what's going on. And there's like this, and you can't see because this is audio, but there's like this 45-degree angle or steeper slope that I'm walking down, and it's muddy because it's been raining. And I'm trying to get a grip on, you know, like, if there's three cats back here, where the heck are they? And I see chain link fencing, and I think it's part of just the yard fencing that maybe they had wood on the front, chain link on the side. And so I'm making my way over to the chain link, and I hear this bang up on the fence right next to me. And this tiger is just looming over me. She has seen me fumbling around in the dark. Her name was Cookie. And has come flying across her cage and thrown herself against this fence. And when she stands up, she can touch the top of that fence, which means all she's got to do is, you know, pull herself up and over this fence. And so I'm like, okay, we know there's live tigers here. I'm just going to back out because you never want to turn your back on a big cat. And so I'm back in my way, trying to get back up this hill and out the fence. So I call my rescue team and I'm like, okay, go ahead and pack everything up and still come this way. We're just going to Mississippi instead of Louisiana. So they get up here the next day. And with daylight, I go out and I see that there is Cookie. There is a liger named Freckles and another tiger named Alex who are left behind in these cages. And they're all like down this horrific slope. And there's just like, there's no way to put the cat into a transport wagon and get them out of there easily. And so we've got this big trailer. We've got these wagons. They go down the hill really easily. But now we've got to put these 300, 400 pound cats into these enclosures and get them back up the hill. And I mean, we had some video done at the time, but mostly we were busy trying to do the work rather than film the work. And I really wish we had spent more time filming it because it was hysterical to see all of us just pushing and falling and sliding, and we'd get halfway up the hill and then all of us would just slide back down to the bottom with these cats.
So wait, the cats, I'm thinking of my cat carrier that I have for my cats, right? My house cats. These are big cat carriers. Yes.
If you've ever seen like a circus wagon, that's what we're dealing with, is a 1,500 pound wagon with a 500 pound cat in it. So we're trying to push 2,000 pounds.
Gosh.
It's like pushing a Volkswagen up a hill.
How did you get them in the cage? Was it easy because you just gave them food? They were starving.
Well, for Cookie and Liger, that was the case. They were really easy to go into the cages, and they were the first two to go in. But once they went in, and usually what we have to do, this is why I have to go out ahead of time, is I have to figure out, okay, if we put our wagon up against the wall, what are we going to have to do to make a hole in the wall? Because there's a cat in the cage while you're trying to cut the hole in the wall. Is there any way to lock the cat up? Which usually there's not. And do we have to, like, build a whole secondary cage around it so that if the cat does get past us, they don't get out into the open? So we had to be able to be prepared to do all of that, which we did. And we were able to get those two girls pretty easily. But Alex, he's seen this now, and he's like, oh, heck no, I am not going in this cage. And so we ended up having to tranquilize him and put him in.
Oh, wow.
But the bad thing about tranquilizing a cat is, you would think, well, okay, they're asleep. You put them in the transport cage and they can wake up sometime down the road. They can die from the tranquilization. So we have to have the vet there to do the tranquilization and to sit with them for the hours it takes them to come back up out of anesthesia. And that, you know, sets your time, your clock back because you're having to wait around until this cat is safe to travel. But we always do that. But that was one of the more difficult rescues.
How do they move that dead weight, the cat? So you tranquilize a cat, and now there's a 1,200-pound cat. Then what?
Well, it's usually a 300 to 500-pound cat.
Okay.
The cage was what usually costs or weighs about 1,500 pounds. But what we do is we'll take tarps out there. And so it is, I mean, if you've ever had to move a sleeping cat, even, they're like liver. They just like, this is dead weight.
Sure.
And so you have to like put a tarp on the ground and then roll the cat onto the tarp and then shovel it out. And then you have people all the way around it. And then you've got all of these people lining up to the transport wagon, because even though it would have been a lot easier to just put him in a tarp and carry him up the hill while he's asleep, even though it takes them usually several hours to wake up, sometimes they come up like that. And so you can't be walking them up in a sheet like that. You got to have them in something safe. So yeah. Even trying to get a cat from a prone position on the ground into a beast wagon like that means you're having to get like in there yourself, and you're holding up hundreds of pounds and you're shuffling backwards, trying to pull them into the wagon and hoping they don't wake up while you're in there.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay.
So many ways that could go wrong.
The whole property is abandoned. The house is abandoned. Cats in the back. You get your team, and you get these two tigers and a liger out of there.
Yeah.
And then what? You drive them to Tampa.
Well, yeah, that was the plan. Unfortunately, our truck broke down at a at a motel on the way back. Well, not at a motel, but in a tiny little, like, nowhereville. I'm thinking it was called, like, Cottonville or something, Florida. I've never even heard of this place before. But, of course, that's where our truck breaks down. And so it was one of those things, like, you know, it's going to be the next day before you can get parts. And so the animals are having to be kept in this transport trailer outside of this little, like, Motel 6 kind of thing. And they're mad, and they are roaring in there. And people are like, what is that? We're like, nothing to see here.
They're roaring in the motel parking lot. Oh, my God. That's too funny.
It's like anything that can't go wrong will go wrong on a rescue.
Okay, so in the morning, the car guy comes or whatever, AAA. They jump the truck or whatever.
Finally pull that thing back into the road and get it into Tampa. And by the time the cats get here, I mean, it's been a long, hard slog for them, and longer and harder than it needed to be because of the truck breaking down. And now they are really, really angry. And if you can imagine, you've seen these big car carriers where they drive like fancy cars up into a covered box type thing with a big fold-down door. So that's the type of thing that the cats are carried in, except that they have air conditioners on them and oxygen monitors and all that kind of stuff and cameras so that we can watch them and make sure that they're okay. But we get to Tampa, and you've got to open that big door. And the minute you start opening that door, these cats are letting you know how angry they are about all of this. And you have to then go up into the cage and have like four or five people, sometimes six people, rolling that thing down the ramp and then out to the cage that we've prepared for them. And so the whole way, the cat's just like so angry, and you're just like, you have to have like nerves of steel to continue to do the work that you have to do while you have this cat that every time it roars, it feels like it's just going to blow your hair off. It's like, it's that powerful.
They're angry, but they're also scared.
Yeah.
I mean, these animals, they don't know where they are. They don't know what just happened.
Right.
Okay, so now you let all three out at the same time?
So each cat went into a separate enclosure. None of the cats, when they come here, have to share space because they're solitary by nature. They don't want to have to fight over food or den space or pools or anything else. So they all had their own individual places that they could be released into. And even that is very difficult for so many of the cats that we rescue. So we'll put the transport cage up against our safety entrances and then open the door. But some of these cats have never touched grass in their entire life. They've been kept on concrete or rocks. And they reach down, they touch that grass, and they're like, I don't know what that stuff is. And then when they do get out, they're like doing these really high-stepping things in the grass. Like, this is just the weirdest stuff. And then after a while, they're like, wow, this is like really amazing. It's soft. And they start rolling in it and eating it and playing in it. And, you know, it's once they have that kind of relaxed attitude that we're just like, yes, this, they finally get it, that nobody's going to hurt them here. But sometimes it takes a while to build that trust.
Sure. It's like an animal when they see snow, you know, and then they go out into the snow, like, what the hell is this? You know, kind of a thing. And so you have veterinarians on staff, I guess, yes?
Not on staff, but we've had two veterinarians for, one of them's been with us for probably 12, 15 years, and the other one maybe 10 years. And so both of them have been on call to us and both come out like once or twice a week. And then in recent years, we have one that we pay to come out once a week and make sure that the cats are being taken care of. So they're not really staff members, but they have their own practices.
What kind of veterinarian is that?
Both of them were, well, the first one that came, Dr. Liz Wynn, she's not our first vet, but the one that's been here the longest of those two. Dr. Liz Wynn had a dog and cat practice, and so the way that I have always gotten our vets is by taking the smaller cats, the kittens from the fur farm, the smaller bobcats and lynx, taking those to the vet first and making sure that they had an affinity for cats in particular, because they have to know all of the same cat diseases and cat behaviors. And in fact, our vets often say that our cats are better behaved than their domestic cat clientele, because your domestic cat has to like stand its ground, whereas a tiger's like, I
that's
got this.
Funny. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, the bigger cat knows that it's not going to be an issue. Oh, that's very funny. And so I'm just trying to think, because I have a niece who's a veterinarian, and she just got out of, like, I don't know, freaking 35 years of school or something ridiculous, and now she has, and now she's like in a residency. You know, obviously they're full on doctors, and now she has to decide which way to go, because there's so many ways to go to be a veterinarian. I mean, you could go for the sea life or the mammals, or you know what I mean, or
and all the specialties in each one of those.
That's what I mean. So, is there a name for the big cat specialty?
No, and it's really hard to find a vet that knows anything about big cats. So even though we've chosen vets that knew domestic cat care, the same vaccines that you use on a domestic cat will actually kill the big cats. So you have to use a killed virus for those cats. And so we usually end up having to educate our veterinarians on the things that will kill a big cat so that they don't do that. And also, like, anesthesia is extremely tricky for the big cats, where most vets are used to doing spays and neuters all day long, and they never have a minute's worth of trouble with anesthesia. But the big cats have a huge problem with it. And so knowing that, like, you've only got you've got to start the reversal process, or you can't start the reversal process for the first 45 minutes, and then you've only got a total of 3 hours if you're doing some huge major surgery and you're not done in 3 hours, you've got to stitch this cat back up and finish it later, because you've got to wake the cat up or it's going to die.
What's reversal? What did that mean?
When you sedate a cat, so you give them a drug, makes them go to sleep, you would think you would just wait until they wake up, but they don't. They actually inject them with something called a reversal. So let's say, like, some of the cats that we've brought in, because our cats love to chew on sticks, and they'll get a stick caught across the top of their mouth between their teeth. So, we have the spoon that we've hooked on the end of a stick, and we use that spoon to try and get the thing out of their mouth if they'll let us do it. But some of the cats are just like, whack, 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 and they're like, never going to let you do it. So you have to sedate them and put them to sleep to get it out. Well, you would think you just knock the cat out, get the stick out, and let them wake up, or do the reversal drug, which wakes them up pretty quickly. Like, they would wake up on their own maybe in 4 or 5 hours, but if you give them this reversal, they'll start coming out of it and maybe half hour, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you give them that reversal drug. But if you give them that reversal drug 5 minutes after you start, you're going to kill the cat. So you've got to wait until it's 45 minutes have passed, and then you can give them the reversal drug.
It's a massive science. It sounds like a massive science. And so the first thing you do when you get these cats is you hydrate them or you feed them, and then you spay and neuter them? What's first?
It depends on what's going on, because every cat comes in with different situations. So obviously if they are dehydrated, that's the very first thing that you can do to save their life. And it's amazing how much that does. I had an old cat brought to me. Gosh, that cat was, I think they said he was 15 years old, which for a private owner, they almost never keep their cats past about 4 or 5 years old when they become adults. But they had kept this cat named Scratch until he was 15 or 17. And he was dying, and they took him to the vet. The vet said, you know, it's time to let him go. They didn't want to do that, so they brought the cat to me. I'm like, what are you giving him to me for? And they're like, well, you take him to the vet, and you put him down, but we can't do it. So this cougar is so dehydrated and so close to death. He was in the back of their station wagon. I pick this cat up, and I carry him into my house, and I laid him on top of my dining room table, and he just laid there because he was in such bad shape. And I say goodbye to the people, and it's like, all right, I'll take care of your cat. And I had IV fluids in the room, and so I just hung it from the chandelier over the dining room table and hooked it up to the cat. And I mean, like in 30 minutes, this cat was ready to go, and he was fine. And these people had left no information with me. I had no way of contacting them and saying, your cat's doing just fine. And he lived here until he was almost 30 years old.
And oh, my God. You're kidding me.
He lived to be the oldest cat we had ever had here.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
And those people just dropped him off, and they didn't even... They just said, you handle it, because they thought the cat was going to pass.
Well, it looked like it.
Then you keep that cat alive for 13 more years. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's amazing what a little bit of vet care and proper food and quiet life will do for these cats. And they do live a long time here, much longer than they live anywhere else. He was an outlier. Usually even our cats are dead by the time they're 22 or so. I've got a tiger right now that's 25.
It's all so fascinating. You know how fascinating all of this is. Yes, you know this. Yes, obviously. These cats don't know their names, do they?
Oh, yeah, they do. Now, whether or not they respond to it is just like your domestic cat. I mean, when you call your cat across the room, and what's your cat's name?
I've got Sophie and Baby.
So when you say Sophie, Sophie's ear is going to flick towards you, not Baby's ear. Baby might, because it's like, well, Sophie getting that I'm not getting. But they know the difference between who's Sophie and who's Baby, and our cats do as well.
That's funny. So those two tigers and the liger, Freckles, what was the other one's names?
Cookie and Alex.
And so then what is the story of those three cats? After you got them to your house, they're enjoying the grass, not your house, the sanctuary. Do you live at the sanctuary?
No. I used to many years ago. I moved off in like 1999.
Yeah, I would think it would be nice to keep the work separate from your home.
Well, actually, we needed a gift shop, and my house was the only place that was suitable for that. So
that's
I got to give up my house.
That's very funny. And so those cats stayed with you. Are they with you now then, those cats?
They stayed until they died. Once a cat comes here, it's here forever.
Oh,
unless it's a wild cat. Now, if the cat is born in the wild and it gets injured in some way or orphaned, then it's legal to put those guys back in the wild. And that's my favorite part of what we do. We have, I think, 6 bobcats right now who are in rehab that will be released back to the wild. But you can't do that if they were born in a cage. It's not legal.
So here in Los Angeles, I live right next to Griffith Park, which is actually the largest urban park in the United States. And in our park, we've got a couple of bobcats. One is named P22, and I think there's P21, and they're tagged, you know. And it's something about can't get across from the Santa Monica Mountains to the other set of mountains, and then they get across the 405 freeway or something, and that's why these cats remain, you know, and they've got to stay in these locations because they can't get back across the freeway to get where they live or where they should be, you know.
I think so they've are got, mountain lions, actually, that are tagged.
Oh, yeah, mountain lions. I think you're right. Mountain lion.
Nobody tags bobcats.
Okay. Yeah, boy, it does get confusing. I have to tell you, you know, the bobcat, the lynx, and I know a little bit because of my deep research in the Kruger National Park via Twitter, via Africa. No, but I mean, I do see so many different kinds of cats, you know, and they get the tiny little head and then they got a bigger head and then they got the lion and the mane. And so they do take on many different looks, obviously, you know, right? Yeah. And so the liger, is that done now? Is that phased out? Are people still doing that? Or there's no more ligers?
Actually, if you watched Tiger King, when they talked to Doc Antle, they were saying, so is this a liger? And he's like, oh, I don't call them ligers because now they've got a bad rap. Well, they've got a bad rap because we've been telling people what's behind making ligers. So now he just calls them big cats and people don't realize that that's what they are. They're ligers.
Yeah. Yeah, because it sounds like a liger would be... Since it's a cross breed, that it might have like some, I don't know how you say, mental issues or like, you know, physiological abnormalities.
They do. And in addition to the fact that they usually die very young because they can't stop growing, they have the whole time that they are alive, they are just so confused because they really don't. They don't resonate with lions or tigers because they are this cross that just doesn't really get who lions or tigers are. And you can just see it in the way that they interact with the other cats. Even though our cats are kept separately, they interact with each other all the time. Across a distance, you can see the way they're talking or calling to each other. And she just was always the odd cat out in that group.
Aw, it's like they get discriminated against, you know, it's almost like human beings, you know, that, you know, you get kicked out if you're a little bit different or whatever. Okay, we're going to wrap this up in 1 second. I just find, I find you very interesting. And as an animal advocate, you know, I just feel like you've done such good work. That was the other thing that was odd about Tiger King, because it looked like at the beginning, everybody was a friend of the animal, like everybody was an advocate. But then you start realizing, wait a minute. That guy wants to be a country music star or some, I don't know what he was trying to do. I mean, it was just so odd. It was all just very odd. That producer, real quick, of Tiger King, you know, in the first scene or one of the very first scenes of the very beginning of Tiger King, they show this guy, black hat, black shirt. He's sitting like a character out of a Clint Eastwood movie. And I don't know. It seems like he's straightforward. But then as you watch the special more and more, it's like he manipulated every single part of that film. You know what I mean? To show you in an angry light or to show you looking this way or that way. And so it was just such a perfect storm of this guy manipulating every one of the shots. It was just so. It must have just been really hard to see
that.
You know, I know you were with your husband, Howard, and you must have just been watching it like,
that was a missed opportunity. Because to us, what I thought was, this was just, it wasn't Blackfish, and it could have been. It could have shown the horrible way these animals are treated, and it could have really gotten people galvanized behind supporting the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And instead, it just kind of, it seemed to go out of its way to paint both people trying to save animals and people who were exploiting animals as all being bad because we have animals in cages, and didn't address the issue that you can't turn these animals loose. It's not legal. You can't just rescue a tiger and turn it loose. And that was the biggest pushback I got after Tiger King, was people saying that I should let these animals free, or saying they were going to set these animals free. I'm like, what? You out of your mind? Who's going to open that door?
Where? Yeah, good luck. I was going to ask you that. So where did
State
you guys, when you say you're
going to
relocate or put the six bobcats back out there, where will you
the
put them?
Where
will
possible?
You release them?
So a lot of people call me asking me to get bobcats out of their neighborhoods because they don't realize that the bobcats are really helpful to the neighborhoods as far as keeping the rat population in check. And I always tell them the same thing. I can pick the cat up and I have to put it right back where I found it. So no, you can't do that. But when they're injured, we can take them out, get them fixed up, and then put them back.
Yeah. Yeah, and like any animal, they must know their territory, or you know, they know their space. They smell their need. The scents.
And it was another
all
thing
that
people were angry about in Tiger King. They said your cages are so small. Our cages are 10 times bigger than Joe Exotic's cages, but still, a tiger needs anywhere from 100 to 400 square miles of territory. There's no cage any of us are ever going to produce for them that are going to give them the kind of life they deserve. And I had a bobcat, 20-pound cat, who had come in. She'd been hit by a car twice. This cat managed to survive getting hit by 2 different cars, smashed her pelvis all to pieces. We had her in rehab for weeks inside. And then when she was healthy enough, we put her in our outdoor enclosures, which are 5,000 square feet. And the first night she was in that outdoor enclosure, I was watching her on a Nest Cam. The cat traveled 16 miles in a single night on these broken legs and hips that she had. And, I mean, they'd been pinned and all, but still, she was recovering from that. So imagine how much space even a 20-pound bobcat needs. They have at least five square miles of territory that they patrol in the wild.
Sure.
Right, they'll fight to protect that space.
Massive. Wow. One bobcat will have all that space, as it were, to themselves. Oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
Zoo,
that's a lot of space.
Yeah,
and that Joe Exotic, he had all the tigers in the same cage.
It looked like he had one big open area where there were a bunch of young tigers where he put his throne up and that sort of thing. And that was mostly what they showed in Tiger King. But what they didn't show is it was just row after row after row of what, if you could imagine, what are pretty much like dog kennels at your local shelter, full of tigers and lions and ligers. And it was just cage after cage like that, no grass, nothing to do, just barren, awful existence. And the minute you got out of the car in the parking lot, you could hardly breathe for the smell of cat piss because it was just so many cats on such a small area. It was only 14 acres, and he had, I think he said 1,200 animals on that 14 acres and 1,200 animals. And I think it was 200 tigers that he said he had on that little space.
Oh, my God.
According to the people that worked with him,
so he wasn't ever spaying or neutering
and lions and ligers. So all of those cages that I just mentioned to you would have pairs of cats in them. And you saw in Tiger King how that mother cat was delivering the baby and they were pulling it out with the hook across the rock and then squeezing it through the side of the cage. That's what was happening all the time there. And as soon as those babies were out of the cage, that female was still in with the male, and so she was being bred right back again. So every 68 days, she can be pumping out cubs this way. And his husband said that at the trial that he had taken at least 100 of these cubs across state lines and sold them to people as pets or these little roadside zoos, which was illegal. And that's part of why he testified against Joe, was because he had been involved in doing that. And then Eric Cowie, the guy who just recently died, said that he had seen Joe, or that he knew that Joe had killed over 100 tigers to make space for the new babies. And so this was just a breeding mill of proportions that people have no idea. And yet I believe that the producers of Tiger King had to have seen that. They were there. They could have seen this with their own eyes because they were there for 5 years, just like they were with us. There's no way that they didn't have the ability to show people what was really happening there. And yet that's not the picture people got of what was going on.
Those people, those producers could have turned him in.
One of the things
right?
that I found
they
most
could have had him arrested
we were
years ago
the
for the
they knew
abuse of
about
animals.
This whole murder for hire thing. They knew that the feds were trying to find Joe. He had gone on the run. And none of us knew until we saw it in Tiger King that somebody was filming Joe on the run and taking tiger cubs. You might remember that scene where he's got the tiger cubs in his truck and he takes them to this place and he says he's going to protect these babies because he owes that to them because those are his babies. I believe he was just raising money for his ability to escape the feds, picking him up on the murder for hire charges. And it looks to me like the film crew is in tow and knows where he is, knows who he's selling to and knows how all of this is going down, and they're not turning that into the authorities. So, you know, what does that tell you about them and what their concern about my life, that he's got this hitman in the wind to come kill me, that they don't alert anybody as to what's going on there? I just,
yeah,
I'm appalled if that's how that was filmed.
Appalled. You must have been terrified and appalled. And I mean, it's just all so horrible. But now, if we look back, at least you rescued all those cats off his property. At least that was shut down. And at least he's in jail, you know? I mean, that's a dangerous person. He was almost like a cult leader to those people.
I think the why,
you know, they were really holding him in some sort of reverence for I don't know why.
How he was at the end of his rope with alcoholism, and that he found the place on Craigslist, and he went from being a nobody to somebody who was considered the tiger expert there, and who was putting on tiger shows, and, you know, getting all of that attention and notoriety, I think, appeals to these people. And they don't want to give that up. And so even though I think he came across as a very sympathetic character because of the fact that he clearly was hurting at the fact that he had helped Joe kill those five tigers, when he talks about, or when he says to the media that Joe had killed over 100 cats, well, at what point do you say, this is enough, I need to turn this into the authorities, I need to call Carol Baskin and let her know what's going on if the authorities won't do anything? I don't know what was happening with the
and
bodies.
And what did he have, like a crematorium on the property, or was he burying these animals?
That I'm doing, but you'll see in the next few months where we discovered some of this went, but there's an awful lot of it that's still not accounted for.
Do you wish you'd never heard that man's name in the whole world, or are you glad that you were able to turn around that particular roadside disaster?
She would always refer to this as a whack-a-mole world, because as soon as we find one of these abusers and bring them to justice, there's somebody else that pops up, and we're like, who is that guy, and how do they have 50 tigers in their backyard? We didn't know about him before now. So, you know, do I wish I'd never heard his name? No. I want to find out where all of this abuse is happening, and I want to put an end to it every single place that it's happening. But what I really want is for it not to be happening. And when our federal bill passes, it won't be happening, because it stops the cub petting and it phases out the private ownership. That gets rid of 95% of the abuse right there. And what the benefit of, the huge benefit of that is if we stop that flood of animals ending up into creating this legal smokescreen for all this illegal activity, it's going to be a whole lot easier with that 5% of cats who are continuing to be bred and exploited to figure out who each one of them is and follow them through to find out where they're ending up. And if we can't find them, then that gives authorities something to say, okay, well, where is your tiger now? Is it in the crematorium? Is it in the ground? Mm-hmm. What happened to that?
Now, is the project you're talking about, because I read something about a project coming out in 2021.
The one I'm talking about, I'm not allowed to say the name of it or where it's going to be or what the show's about or anything.
But I don't know if it's the same one I'm thinking of.
I think the one you're thinking about is The Conservation Game. And that was one.
Well, then maybe it's not the one I'm thinking of, because the one I saw was on IMDb.
The producers, we were working with Mike Weber on his film, and his film actually shows how Tiger King got started. And so there have been premieres in both Washington, D.C. and in L.A. that I attended for that film. It's not available for public viewing yet, but it soon will be, and it's coming to a whole bunch of theaters. If you go to theconservationgame.com, it'll tell you which theaters you can see it at. But the way this whole problem started was because of people that were being held out to us as conservationists, like Jack Hanna or Jared Miller or Boone Smith, all of these guys were taking cute little cubs onto the talk shows, and they were talking about saving cats, and they were saying these cats came from the zoos, and that they were going back to zoos or going back to sanctuaries, and they were coming from the private hands, and they were going into horrific situations or just up and disappearing. And so that's what the conservation game exposes.
That's right. That's what I was thinking of, because we all were so enamored when Jack Hanna from the Columbus Zoo would take these exotic animals on Johnny Carson or Jay Leno or whoever. And we all thought that was such a great segment. Oh, my gosh, it's so cute. Oh, it's so cute. And everybody would love those segments, you know, oh, because Jack Hanna's going to be on. Oh, what's he got tonight? Oh, he's bringing on a python or whatever. And then it turns out that he wasn't even taking a lot of these animals from the zoo. He was taking them from private breeders just to show them on TV. So that was a completely, like, it was a whole smokescreen right there.
And what you see in the film is that they were lying to us. When the talk show host would say, well, where did this cat come from? And they'd say, oh, it came from the Columbus Zoo. Well, where is it going to go after here? And he'd say, oh, you know about the wilds, right? 10,000 acres. There's never been big cats at the wilds. And none of those cats ended up at the wilds. They ended up in these horrible situations. And so once people see that they've been lied to from the time we were children, we were lied to by these people. And then it's obvious why people would want to touch them. They saw other people touching them.
Sure.
And if you're passing around those kinds of images, you're just making other people want to pay to have that opportunity. And there are charlotans
and
that will provide you with that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for your time. And I think that at the end of the day, you're doing such good work and you're bringing so much attention to this issue. And when that law passes, where is it, by the way? Where is the bill in law? The Federal Big Cat Act. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Big Cat Act. If people go to bigcatact.com and type in their name and address, it will create an email to send to your member of Congress asking them to support the bill. It'll send a tweet to your member of Congress. And if you want to really help the cats out, then it will actually dial your member of Congress. You have to choose each one of these options separately. But when you dial your member of Congress, it calls your representative and it gives you a little script to say, please ask your boss to co-sponsor the Big Cat Public Safety Act. Stay on the line. It'll call both of your senators. You just do the same thing again. And if you're shy, do it on the weekend. Do it at night. You're going to talk to an answering machine. It won't be scary.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what we need to do to get this passed. So we have about 204 co-sponsors in the House. And we passed a House floor vote last year with a two-thirds majority, so we think we're going to be able to do that in the next couple of months. And then we have about 24 senators that are on the bill so far, so that's where we're putting a lot of our attention right now, is getting more Senate co-sponsorship.
Do you actually go out yourself and lobby with these senators, or do you ever try to, you know, you go to D.C. and you try to meet with somebody to, you know, state your case? Do you do that?
I did a lot of that before Tiger King. And then, of course, when Tiger King hit, it was also during the time of COVID. So it made me wonder, once we were able to travel again, how would I be perceived in Congress? You know, because the way I was portrayed in Tiger King was so horrific, that I was this gold-digging, home-wrecking murderer. Would they even want to have an audience with me to talk about big cats? And so I was really concerned that I would not be able to be a voice for the cats after the way that I was portrayed. But I found that not to be true. I've made a couple of trips to D.C. and have been warmly welcomed by everybody, so that's been great. And everybody who's come up to me in person has been wonderful. It's only been people that could hide behind an alias or a burner phone that I get a lot of hate mail. But so I feel like it didn't help my situation any to have been in Tiger King, but it turns out I don't think it's hurt any.
But in fact, it did help, because your sanctuary is so well known now. BigCatRescue.org must get more hits than ever.
Not really. You'd be surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you look at the number of Facebook fans that we had before Tiger King, we had 3.2 million Facebook fans before Tiger King. We had 3.5 after. It wasn't a huge increase. Our YouTube subscribers, I think we had 1.3 million before Tiger King. We have 1.6 million now. So this has just been the natural trajectory of what we've been through. Our donations in 2020 were even with 2019. They weren't better or worse. They're a little bit down.
But that's
this year.
But that's actually really good, considering that people were still able to contribute in 2020 like they did in 2019.
Well, actually, we're seeing more of that pullback this year than last year. So I think people are feeling the pinch more now than they were before.
Sure.
Well,
we're living in bizarro times. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much going on. But I'm thrilled to meet you, and I'm really happy about the work that you're doing, bigcatrescue.org. You guys check it out. It's a fabulous website. It really is. Is there any social media that you personally like, Carol? Do you like Insta or Twitter or anything?
Where we have the most impact is on Facebook, and we have people. I've got over 200 volunteers who work just on our social media sites. So if you go to any of our social media sites, and we're on all of them, even some that I had never heard of, like MeWe.
You have 200 people helping you on social media. Carol.
And they're amazing. I mean, they go through classes and they learn about the cats and they can answer all your questions. Aww. And they're trained to be nice to people, even though people come in there being really hateful. A lot of people do. So they've been amazing. And they're mostly on Facebook, but they're on all of the channels.
Sure, sure. Well, you're amazing, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you, Christine.
So thank you so much. All right, you guys, we got to wrap it up. Make sure you head over to Twitter and tweet me at Storyworthy. And then do you know the Twitter address of Big Cat Rescue?
At Big Cat Rescue. We're that everywhere.
Yeah, okay, good. At Big Cat Rescue. That makes it easy. And then everybody should head over to Kruger National Park. Follow Kruger as well. Come on, you guys. Check out the wild animals in Africa with me in real time. That's the exciting part. I'm like looking at my phone at 4 a.m. Oh, my God, cheetah in the tree. Look at it. I'm such a knucklehead. Anyway, this has been great
fun.
And I want to thank you one more time, Carol Baskin. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Christine.
All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.